Yo, what up? Welcome to another episode of the Oakland Warriors podcast. I'm Patrick, and today I am joined by my friend Mike Pasquale. What's up, Mike?
Hey, what's up, everybody?
So Mike is, I've talked about this group text that I'm on, that I've been on for like 5 years now, and a bunch of people on that group text have been on this show, and Mike is the latest one. Glad to have him on here. This is actually the first time I'm talking to Mike in real life. We were always texting back and forth. I like his takes on the Warriors, but I always ask people the first time they're on, like, what's your Warriors fandom background? Like, when did you become a fan? And let's say, what's your earliest memory?
I would say my kind of like origin story is growing up, I used to always be like a baseball fan. But right around when we drafted Weber is when I kind of started following the Warriors a little more and more. That first season we had him was kind of like when I started switching off to like following basketball. And my first kind of Warriors memory was that Chris Weber, like behind the back, you know, dunk over Barkley.
Yeah.
And that's like, that's really what kind of like drove me to just become a total like fanatic. That following season, you know, there was like high expectations. We had Weber, everyone was excited. Like Tim Hardaway was going to be coming back. He was supposed to complete the puzzle and we were going to, you know, make a run for the championship. And then unfortunately we all know kind of how that ended up. But yeah, ever since that season, I think it was it like 94, 95, right around there. I just, pretty much just watched every game growing up all throughout high school. Kind of fell off a little bit during college and then, you know, through those dark years. And then We Believe, of course, is also one of the biggest memories. That's probably the best game I've ever been to. I went to that game three over at Oracle. And I could never forget that.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. So you started kind of with Weber and then so you experienced the highs and then the heartbreak like right away.
it was like half a season of highs. And then, you know, however many years later, 15 years of heartbreak.
All right. Cool. So I want to talk to you about Draymond Green. This whole thing, I mean, there's just so much. There's nothing going on in the NBA right now, really. And this Draymond thing, it's just hanging over the Warriors in a weird way. Let me ask you this. Do you think Warriors fans hate Draymond Green now?
I think hate's a strong word. You can't really hate someone who was a crucial part of four championships. I think they're maybe tired of his act. That's maybe a better way to put it. But I think he's definitely starting to wear out his welcome a little bit.
Yeah, well, we got him for four more years at least unless he gets traded or unless Steph, his security blanket, decides he doesn't want him around anymore. But it's funny, man. Like, I was on Twitter a bunch and just reading stuff. And, like, man, I really think, I think, you know, in all my time doing this podcast, I'm not that active on Twitter, although, you know, there's a handful of people that I love interacting with. I think there's three types of Warriors fans. Warriors fans who are not on Twitter, Warriors fans who are on Twitter, and then Warriors Twitter. You know what I'm saying? To be a Warriors fan on Twitter is totally different from Warriors Twitter, right? Because like it is such a, I mean, Twitter has social media. We know how all that stuff goes, but like it is such a fascinating place where people really define their identities, it seems like, by you know, their Twitter clout, Warriors clout, NBA clout and whatnot. But, you know, getting away from all that knee jerk reaction type stuff. I mean, what is your impression of Draymond right now and, you know, where this is all going? For those who didn't know, like he again talked about the Jordan Poole punch thing. He talked about like, you know, he hinted at things that Jordan Poole was saying and that it wasn't an instantaneous thing. It was like building up without actually saying what Jordan Poole was saying. And then I don't know what you got.
Well, my main thing is like, why bring it up? Right. It's like Jordan Poole got traded. You got your new contract four more years. You know, you got what you wanted, basically. The guy is gone. There's no reason to like rehash like all this old stuff. unless he's kind of trying to defend himself. That's kind of like what I'm thinking. Like you don't bring something up, bad things up, unless you're trying to like clear your name or something, right? Like there's no real benefit to Draymond Green bringing this stuff up, unless he just wants, you know, clickbait or something. So like the only thing that makes sense to me, I have no idea if this is true, is if he feels like he was in the right for punching Jordan Poole. Like Jordan Poole was talking smack about, I'm just like throwing something out there that, you know, might be the case, but like nothing, you know, sourced or anything, but like Jordan Poole was like talking about my mom, blah, 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 blah. And it just kind of like, I couldn't take it anymore. And then he like said one last thing about my mom and I just had to like punch him in the face. It's like he's trying to, I feel like Draymond Green is, but he doesn't want to be the one to say it, right? He doesn't want to be like, hey, Jordan Poole said this. He kind of like wants Jordan Poole to kind of like bait him into like saying like, hey, you said something really bad about me, you know, why don't you tell the world what you said. Which to me kind of makes sense, because it's like Jordan Poole hasn't really said anything about it. So you know, when you don't talk about something, there's two reasons. It's either you were in the wrong, or you're just like what he's trying to portray, which is like, I'm being the mature adult here, and like, I don't need to say anything else. So it really could be anything, but it's just more of an irritation to me, because it's like, now we're talking about it again. You know, it's like, we can't, I just want to move on. And like, he's basically just like, keeps bringing everybody back to it. But the one thing that kind of like outside of the whole Jordan Poole thing, the thing that actually did catch my attention even more during that kind of like Pat Beverly podcast was he kind of like mentioned that he doesn't have a relationship with Jonathan Kuminga. And that to me is like even more alarming. It's like, I thought that was supposed to be like the guy you're grooming, and yet you have no relationship with him. And so it's like, to me, it's like, if you, I don't know. He's supposed to be kind of like the mature one in the room, kind of supposed to be the leader, trying to be the vet, teaching the young guys the ropes. And he's kind of like saying one thing when doing another.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've taken a break from, you know, putting out like podcast episodes, because I was doing them so often, like game by game and then some, and I just needed a break. Right. And I wasted so much breath in the last 10 months or whatever, 9 months, about Draymond Green, Jordan Poole, this whole thing, you know. And I've said, I'm glad Jordan Poole's gone. Like, I did not like him as a player. I had seen potential. When you see him, there's one game he had like 11 assists. I was like, okay, here we go. This is who he could be. But the falling down, the no defense, the thing I couldn't stand was like, the heat check threes with 20 seconds on the shot clock, the playing to the crowd, right? Yeah, pool party. I'm so glad I don't have to hear pool party anymore, to be honest, because it was like pool party on one end and no defense on the other. And that was always really, like, you know what I mean? I get it. Fans love, like, you know, the big 3-point shot, and he's fun, you know, like in any, he dances. Steph dances. Steph is like one of the all time greats, you know what I mean? So I'm good with that. But like, and Steph has always tried to play defense, you know, even when Mark Jackson wouldn't let him play against point guards, he wanted to guard point guard, took it as a challenge. Jordan Poole, nope. So, you know, he's gone. I was happy about that. I don't dislike him. I don't know him personally, whatever, but just, I did not like watching his game. But I take his side in this Draymond thing ever since. And again, not trying to rehash the whole season, but it's like, you know, there's been way too many times where I feel like Draymond addresses this and he acts like, you know, I mean, you said it, like, I think he is trying to, in a way, justify it. And the more he talks about it, the more it's going to come out that he's justifying it, because the Warriors, Steph, Kerr, Dunleavy, they chose him. You know what I mean? And if you remember the beginning of last season, after he punched him, it was like Wiggins and Poole got their contracts and then Draymond didn't. And it was like, is Draymond, you know, can someone show that Draymond is not needed anymore? Season went to hell. You need Draymond. Of course, Steph wants Draymond, so he stays. And now we get him for 4 more years. And don't get me wrong, like, I don't, like, you know, like, there's this thing, right? Like, some people think if you're critical of Draymond, you're not a real Warriors fan, right? And I find that to be really sophomoric and really just like stupid, because, you know, if you're blindly supporting somebody for off the court stuff just because he plays for your favorite team, then like I've never been into that. That's silly. So right now, like I'm flustered with the dude because I've said this, I think, before. To me, he's gone from being this lovable underdog, like our guy who is funny and brash, who is now more of a kind of an obnoxious front runner. You know what I mean? He's friends with Draymond. Steph has his back. He's on TNT. He's got his podcast. Like, he is one of the cool kids. You know what I mean? And he's punching down on younger guys who are just trying to make their way. And like, and then literally punching down at somebody who, you know, talks back to one of the biggest trash talkers in the league. So I get it. You know, Draymond's trying to say like there was something that was said, but like,
yeah, no excuse. Say though, it. I mean,
yeah. If you can say it, right? And like, and all this stuff about like, oh yeah, you know, sports, people getting fights on, you know, like, whatever. Draymond is like in his early mid 30s, you know, like he is supposed to be a leader of this team. You can't be selectively a leader like that, right? Because you said it yourself, he's cost the Warriors several things. He's given the Warriors a lot, right? Like, you know, the titles, right? He's critical to those things, but he's also critical to like some of, you know, the more painful parts of this dynasty, right? Losing in 2016, even though he played great in game 7. I mean, the LeBron like swipe, which I still think it was not like a suspendable offense, but I know it was the flagrants, but you know, so that's a whole nother lobbying, LeBron lobbying for with Kiki Vandeweghe. But yeah, like I'll pull for him like crazy as I always do on the court, but off the court, man, I just can't. I can't listen to him talk about this anymore. And I get it. Pat Beverly brings him on the podcast, can ask him about it. It's ratings, right? But man, just I don't know. It's like it's frustrating stuff, man. You know?
Yeah, it's a classic case to me of you know, winning cures all woes. You know, as long as Steph's on it, you know, as long as Steph has his back, as long as the Warriors believe that he's, you know, instrumental to the core of continuing to pursue winning a championship, it's like they're gonna basically just deal with his personality and all that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why, like, when he signed for 4 years, $100 million, I was like, cool, you know, I was like, great. Because yes, I know, we all know that the Warriors need him to make any kind of run at the finals, to go deep in the playoffs, be a contender and whatnot. Doesn't mean that we have to love everything, now, all the chatter that goes on outside. Like, right? He's clapping back at Jordan Poole's dad. You know? And I'm just like, what? This is we're getting into the really, really, really like dumb periods of the off season. And, you know, I mean, maybe not as dumb yet as like when he accidentally put out a photo of his junk on Snapchat way back in the day.
I forgot about that one.
But you know, he helped us get KD and he helped us get rid of KD, I guess. So, you know, it is, comes with the territory. But yeah, I love watching him play. I just at this point, I don't enjoy hearing him talk. He seems like he's plays the victim in this, and he's like infallible, you know what I mean?
He kind of reminds me a lot of like Rodman back in the day.
Yeah, but like, at least Rodman didn't talk like
not so much of like Rodman talked, but it was more of the like just team distraction. Like Rodman would like just, from what I've heard, just, you know, not show up to practice for like 2 weeks and then like be in Vegas or whatever.
Right.
But just like kind of the fact that he was a distraction to the team, but when he did play, he made such a contribution to them winning, and that like everyone was just kind of like willing to look the other way.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I was in Chicago for the three-peat the second three-peat. And, you know, the thing about Rodman was like, everybody's like, oh, signing Dennis Rodman and all the history with the Pistons and Scottie Pippen and, you know, him knocking Pippen during the playoffs and all this stuff, all the bad blood. But the thing was like, he fell in line because Michael Jordan was there. And, you know, he kicked the cameraman once on the sideline. I remember that. And he did all this other stuff, through his, you know, get ejected, through his jersey in the stands, all that jazz. But like at the end of the day, he was always going to fall in line. And, you know, I feel like at the end of the day, Draymond's going to do what he's going to do. You know, like he's cost the Warriors big games and then regular season games, little games, whatever. But, you know, and when it comes to like the whole Poole thing, where it's like, if Poole was like mouthing off about something consistently, where's the leadership in like Steph pulling him aside or Kerr or somebody being like, yo, don't talk that, or Iguodala or something like that? I don't know. It's all conjecture. I'm not in the locker room. I don't know these folks. But like, why do you got to let it get to that point? You know what I mean? And
yeah,
again, I've said my theory, which is like, he was just so handcuffed by whatever Poole said, like he didn't have a good enough comeback. And I mean, you look at that clip, man, he's surrounded by like, I don't know, Baldwin, Rollins, like just a bunch of kids. And so instinctually he's just saving face, and he was backed into a corner. When you're backed into a corner, you lash out, and he had nothing to say, and he just lashed out with his fist, you know, not excusable at all. I think it's garbage. But you know, I don't know, whatever. That's just again, completely 100% conjecture. I just want the season to start so they're not talking about this anymore. Although I think I guess it'd be foolish to think it's not going to get talked about, you know?
But I mean, we're still going to play Washington, you know, what, twice a year? It's going to come up every time.
Yeah, man. And, you know, those photos of like Poole, like the in the Washington Wizards uniform, and when people like compare them to the Warriors, like media day uniform and stuff, where like he's happy. And then in the Wizards uniform, he's just like, he looks like he just got back from World War One, you know, like that 1,000-yard stare, you know, the shell shocked. But also, I will say, preseason media day photos are 100% different from like, you just got traded, this is your first time in DC, let's put you in a uniform, ham it up, you know what I mean? Try to act like you're happy to be here. So, I don't know. That's are you going to miss Jordan Poole?
No, not at all. I was very frustrated with him by the end. It's just like, I couldn't stand his whole act, the way he's just like complaining to the refs and all that. Like, I just like no sympathy for the guy.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing I could never figure out. Like, why can't anyone get him to listen and play defense? And also, I was frustrated by the fact that he seemingly had such a long leash compared to guys like Kuminga, let alone Moody, who couldn't even get on the court. You know what I mean? Granted, with Steph out for stretches and Clay needing rest, you have to play Poole, right? But like, it was like, oh, let me dribble off my forehead a couple times and then complain about getting fouled and all that stuff. So, you know, anyway, I'm, oh man, Draymond. Are you a Warriors fan who's also a San Francisco Giants fan like me? Then this message is for you. What will the Giants do with the trade deadline? Can they make a deep postseason run? Could Patrick Bailey be the next Buster Posey? These are the questions that keep Brian Murphy and Doug Bruzzoni awake at night, and twice a week, they voice their thoughts on these matters and more as hosts of Giants Croncast, the San Francisco Giants podcast on Fans First Sports Network. Brian and Doug are bloggers who've been on the Giants beat for a decade, and every Monday and Thursday, they assess the state of the roster, the thinking behind the front office's decisions, and the quality of the farm system. It's a comprehensive look at the orange and black. Giants Croncast, the first, best, and only podcast you'll need about the San Francisco Giants, right here on Fans First Sports Network and available wherever you get your podcasts. Let me ask you this. I just want to, for fun, you know, the two timelines thing. You know, everybody says, oh, thank God it's over. It's gone. Didn't work. I will posit the fact that it kind of worked. It worked. They got a title, you know, they got a title with three lottery picks on the roster And, you know, Wiseman didn't play that year.
And none of them really played.
It worked. Yeah, exactly. But I personally think it worked until I'm on record saying I was, you know, looking forward to seeing the young guys play at the beginning of last season. And I thought they were going to make a bit of a leap. Because sometimes, you know, when guys make deep finals runs and get the taste of the playoffs, that they kind of come back like with a little bit more, a little bit more confidence in their games are stronger, right? But then I realized, like, I guess, you know, Kuminga and Moody, they weren't as critical. They weren't like, you know, the main guys or even like secondary guys. So they didn't maybe have that time. Then Wiseman didn't play at all. But I think the mistake was, again, you know, drafting using their two draft picks last offseason. And then you just all of a sudden went super young. And then you have like, I remember watching a game early in season. Andre was injured. And then it was just like the bench was like Rollins, PBJ, Kuminga, Wiseman, and Moses Moody. And I was like, oh, there's a void of experience on that bench, you know, like you need the bench to settle things, and they're not even settled themselves. So I don't know.
I think it worked in 2021-22 because you had, you know, you had Otto Porter Jr., you had Bealy, so you had a couple of veterans that you knew you could count on. And that kind of like took a little bit off of the shoulders of, you know, some of the young guys. But then going into last season, there was kind of more, like you said, more of that hope that some of the young guys would step up. And then like Jamichael Green didn't really work out. Basically, the vets that they did sign last year, I mean, DiVincenzo was okay. But in general, like the vets that they signed last year kind of like really didn't work out, where they didn't have those vets to kind of like fill the void of like some of the inexperience of the young guys. And then that meant that the young guys needed to step up, have more pressure for them to step up, and they just weren't ready. And I think that's kind of where the two timelines thing fell apart. It's like they had the veteran core, they had like the young core, but they didn't have like that kind of medium, like in the middle kind of like people to kind of bridge that gap. It was either one or the other. And that's I feel like where they kind of lost it.
Yeah. And you make a good point. Like, it's like when you're so top heavy on the salary, you're trying to get like veteran minimums or guys to take part of the mid level, like DiVincenzo did. It's like, it's a hit or miss, right? Like, it's like they hit on Bielitsa at least enough. And then, of course, they hit on Gary Payton, even though Steph and Draymond wanted Avery Bradley instead. And I think, you know, obviously they hit on Otto Porter Jr. staying healthy as well. But Jamichael Green, you know, they took a shot, and it wasn't good enough. DiVincenzo, he was great at times in the regular season. And then I think he faltered once Payton came back. And I think, like, you know, that kind of threw him off for the playoffs. He just wasn't as consistent or as strong. And, you know, I think, like, you know, when people disparage the two timelines thing, they use it as a derogatory term. I think it's fair to remember that it worked, and they won the title. You know, they maybe had a little bit of hubris and went too far in. I think you can't blame them. You know what I mean? There's folks claiming they knew Wiseman wasn't going to be good, but it's like, dude, there's no way Lakers was going to move him without seeing what he had. In that respect, I will say though, you know, I've always been like a Wiseman supporter. Like, I think the kid had like a really tough start to his career, starting at Memphis, you know, and only playing three games and then not playing at all and all that stuff. Well reported, well talked about. And he just doesn't have enough experience and minutes under his belt. And he's suffering from that now, because now he's on a team where there's other centers in Detroit, and he still hasn't had enough minutes. So his game hasn't developed, and it's just unfortunate. But I also think it's too bad, because if he was able to come back from that meniscus when we all thought he was in the title season, there would have been far less pressure on him to like be that guy to justify the number two pick with Bielitsa, with Otto Porter Jr. You know what I mean? And then all of a sudden it's like, all right, all young guys, second year guys, and then Wiseman, and then, you know, you're on the spot. By the way, you just watched, you know, one of the leaders of the team punch out somebody that you probably get along with, you know what I mean? So, you know, I always, you know, there's a bajillion what ifs in sports and in basketball. Let me ask you, like, why do you think, again, this is an off-season topic, like, why do you think people punch down on Wiseman so much? Why do you think they hate this kid so much?
It's just the expectation. You know, he was supposed to be the missing piece that, you know, we've always wanted, that kind of like skilled seven-footer who can, you know, rebound, block shots, kind of like do all those little things that Looney was doing, but kind of as a more complete player. And he just really either didn't have enough time to develop into that, or was just like not willing to take on that role. Kind of like hearing a lot of like the stuff that happened after the trade, it kind of sounded like he just wasn't necessarily willing to take on that role, or maybe just didn't have the basketball IQ to take the role on. Basketball wise, you know, I've heard a lot about him just like not being able to like make the reads fast enough, kind of like the ball kind of like sticking when it got to him. He kind of seemed like a throw it down into the post and, you know, you kind of like take the ball and, you know, do what you want with it type of player. And he also don't kind of like seem like he, I don't think the problem with Wiseman is I don't think he knows what he wants to be, because sometimes he, you know, looks like he wants to be like a more of a Giannis, where he's like grabbing the rebound and like taking it down the court and like possibly shooting threes. Other times it's like, well, we really just want you to be a dunker and, you know, play defense. But I think one of the things I was always a Wiseman supporter. I kind of still am. Like, I still want the kid to do good. But one of the things that kind of turned me off from him was, I forget which game, but I'm pretty sure it was like highly reported, where he kind of was like throwing his arms up because like Steph wasn't passing him the ball.
Right, right.
Like, dude, like, you definitely don't know your role on this team if you're complaining that you're not getting the ball.
Yeah.
Like from Steph.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a bad look, bad optics and whatnot. And yeah, I mean, in a way, he doesn't know what he wants to be or can be, because he just hasn't had the time. He hasn't had the opportunity, right? Like, and you know, I think like Detroit probably isn't the best place for him, although, you know, it's better than the Warriors for him. And I think it's fair to say like he never picked up things quickly enough, but that's largely because of reps, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but and, I do remember his rookie year, like there were times where he was like flashing like big time. I remember there's like a game against the Lakers where we were just like throwing him alley-oops like it was nothing, and I was like, oh man, this is it, this is like gonna be like the new formula. And
dude,
the meniscus and never basically came back.
Yeah, I remember like there were the people on Twitter like cutting like clips of him and David Robinson, like, you know, running on fast breaks, like one man fast breaks, right? And then him and Giannis and all this stuff. And then as his career's going, right? Like, it's like, okay, you get traded. You're no longer like the number two pick. You're some guy who was a failed pick and is now trying to rehab his value. So it's like now he's just becoming a strict like role player. And, you know, I mean, we'll see what it becomes. I'm pulling for the kid because maybe I'm just old and I'm like, you know, he seems like a good dude, a good kid, tries hard, and, you know, just caught some breaks, some bad breaks here and there. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see how that all pans out. not to make this a James Wiseman podcast, but, you know, I'll always, you know, when people say like, oh man, that's in the past, that's old, it's like, excuse me, part of being like a fan, a longtime fan, a diehard fan, is all those memories, all those what ifs, all those, like, you know, kind of rejiggering things in your mind, right? Like, I think about the Weber thing all the time. Well, maybe not all the time, but pretty often, right? And so when somebody brings it up, it's like, oh, I got opinions, and we're not, you know, like, I think there was something on the group text. You know, it's like I was totally on Weber's side of that thing, right? And you're not gonna convince me otherwise. But like, you know, and to me, like this Wiseman thing is gonna be one of those down the road, just like, you know, drafting Todd Fuller instead of Kobe or O'Donnell instead of Tracy McGrady. You know what I mean? Like, it's these like things that as a fan that like gets your emotions going, you know what I mean? So we'll see.
Yeah, to that point, I'm heavily scarred with like players that we've traded. I think there was like a period that like basically a bunch of players that we traded, you know, late 90s, early 2000s, like all of them became all-stars. And like there was Gugliotta, Gatling, Tim Hardaway became an all-star again after he left. I was just like, man, anyone that leaves the Warriors, it's like, why did we get rid of them? Sometimes it's just the fit, though. I mean,
everything in the 90s was poor management. You know what I mean? Like, that's not fit, right? Like, it's like you pick Weber over Nelson. you pick Hardaway over, or you pick Sprewell over Hardaway. I mean, I like Sprewell until, you know, whatever. And then you know, Bimbo Coles, Mookie Blaylock, Terry Cummings, Chris Mills. Like, hey, good character guys, you know, whatever, you know. Well, I think Mookie Blaylock went to jail or something. But, you know, one of the toughest ones for me was something that was out of the Warriors' control, I guess, was the Gilbert Arenas thing.
That's a whole nother thing.
So that's why, you know, Wiseman will always be a topic, no matter how he pans out. If he pans out awesome, then it's like, well, there we go. But if he flames out, then it's like everybody can say like, oh, I wanted Halliburton instead. You know what I mean? And like, I was into Halliburton, but I was I'll say I was into drafting Edwards or Wiseman. You know what I mean? And you know, but that's a whole another topic. But cool, man. Anything else you got? Anything else you want to talk about?
No, I think that should do it. At least this one.
Cool, man. Yeah. Well, thank you once again, Mike, for coming on to the show. I'm going to have you back on for sure at some point once there's something interesting to talk about. Again, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
All right. Well, that is another episode of the Oakland Warriors podcast. Be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Feel free to hit me up on Twitter at Patrick E. Pino or at Oakland Warriors. Check out our YouTube channel where you can watch this episode, youtube.com/Oakland Warriors. Check us out at oaklandwarriors.com and be sure to tell your fellow Warrior fan friends to tune in and listen. The Oakland Warriors podcast is produced by National Film Society. And if you're so inclined, please do leave us a 5-star rating on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. And if you want to leave us a nice review saying good stuff about the show on Apple Podcasts, that would be hugely, hugely appreciated, and it would be very, very helpful. Thanks. That's it.
Music in this episode provided by Paper Sun. Special thanks to Paul Amardo for production support. See you next time, and go Dubs.